This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 234. Brought to you by InStock Trades, the Summit City Comic Con, Audible.com, and iFanboy listeners like you.
Northwest Apartment.
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 234. Going to be one for the ages, folks. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Shusha!
All right. And Connor is still missing. If you hear from him, please tell him to call home. But filling in for him is Tom Caters.
I moved into his place today.
Nice. I signed the lease.
I shaved my head. All good. As far as you know, I'm Connor.
But the question is it hot there?
And it's extremely hot.
And are you drinking?
I am drinking. It's very hot.
There you go. You are Connor now. All right. We are from the website ifanboy.com, which is all about comic books. And every week we read all as many of the comics that came out. This week it feels like we read them all. And one of us picks the best comic or the best comic in our opinion and writes the pick of the week review up on ifanboy.com. And then we come here to discuss it as well as the other books that came out this week and anything else that we really feel like talking about as long as it's comic book related. That's the key here, comic books. A quick warning, we're going to talk about what happened in the books. So we're going to be spoiling them. So be careful. If you haven't read your comic books yet, you don't want them spoiled, press pause, come back. You can hear all the good criticism and commentary after you've read the story and are all caught up. This week, Josh has the pick, and let him take it from here.
It was a doozy.
A fuck of a week.
Let me... Whew. I mean, is Bendis still alive?
That was a lot of stuff.
I mean, just everything he had. I went with New Avengers Finale number one. I was like a lot of you. I saw it, and I said they couldn't name it 65.
Yes.
Or 66 or whatever, but... Whatever. I mean, that's at this point, who cares? One of the things I saw a lot of people complaining about really before, almost in lieu of talking about what the book was about or anything, was that it was $5. And I can tell you that I did not notice that until after I had bought it. I don't think it would have made a difference.
Well, it was a thick book. There's a lot of pages.
It was. At this point, whatever. What am I going to do?
the defeated voice.
I mean, like, there really is a question. Like, you know, there's been all sorts of talk on the site, like, where's the point where you draw the line? And I'm like, I don't know. What am I supposed to do? Stop? They got me over a barrel. This is what I do for a living, for Christ's sakes. But I wanted to talk about what it is that what are the reason that is that I picked this book. And a little different, I think, than a lot of the picks that we've made is that a little story goes along with this. So if you read my pick of the week review, this will probably sound slightly familiar, but it goes a little something like this. Back in 2005, I was getting away from comics, at least sort of Marvel DC comics. Like, I was just like kind of bored with them. My comic shop was really far away, so I was not going very often. This was before we had the podcast, and we still wrote the pick of the week. We'd done it, you know, every week forever, but like I would only go pick up my comics every 3 weeks. And I was just kind of bored with everything.
You were on your way out.
No, I mean, I was still reading some stuff and enjoying it, but it was just like, you know, sometimes it
with her.
and I was at work one day, and Ron IM'd me, and he said, "You got to buy the new Avengers trade paperback that comes out today." And this was August of 2005. I looked it up, and I said, "Yeah, great, thanks." he said, "No, seriously," and I said, "Oh, okay, yeah, no, totally, thanks." And then he upped the ante. He PayPal'd me $15 because I'm a cheap prick.
Well, no, it wasn't that you're cheap. It's just that I wasn't going to take no for an answer.
Right. No, and yeah. I appreciate that.
It's the best book he's ever read ever.
And he said, "Go buy it. You're going to really like it." Now, I'm a Bendis fan. I totally am. But I was not. I had not really liked anything that he'd done sort of. I think I'd stopped reading Daredevil even. Like, I just was like, all right, fine, whatever. It's not really my thing. And he said, "Go read it. You'll enjoy it." And so I did, enjoy it.
And what it was? It was the Avengers Disassembled. It was Breakout. It was the first new Avengers trade, and it was one of those moments where I'm like, something's going on here, like something's starting. And I knowing that I knew that you liked the Avengers, I thought that you would want to be reading it. So
And so I think I had actually heard the reason that I didn't read it was because when he did Disassembled.
He killed Hawkeye.
And I was like, I don't want to read that. You know, screw that. So I wasn't going to do it. And I read it. I really enjoyed it. And that was sort of, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh, that was the book that got me back into. It wasn't, but it was a step. It was sort of an important thing. And when I think back at the symbols, the milestones of that stuff, that was one of those moments. That was one of those things that I remember that was a big deal. 3 months after that, we started doing this podcast. And for those of you who've been following along now, this is my job now. This is what I do. This is how I support my family. You know, I talk about comics all the time. So that's an important milestone. And so it's kind of a big deal. Now, this is the end of the first sort of chapter, I guess, or, you know, collection of new Avengers stories. It's going to be a new series starting up or whatever. But if you were to start here or stop here, it's a fine end. It's an end to a story. And I think that the thing that I liked about it is, and I went into this, I should know, as cynical as anybody else, if not more so. You know, I've been through the whole ringer just like everybody else. I complained about Civil War and Secret Invasion and Dark Reign and you know, I bought every book though. I'm a person who's like, well, if you don't like it, don't buy it. But I bought every single one of those books. So there's something to that. Even though I didn't always love everything that happened, it's a book that I've always stuck around for because it's sort of the center of Marvel, and Bendis has always been one of my favorite writers. That's just true. Because you can complain about things and also like them at the same time. It's nuance, I know. you know, I just read it, and I got sort of halfway through it, and there's a big fight in the middle where the point is the big siege thing has ended, and the new Avengers are sitting around, and they're like, well, what do we do? And they're like, well, let's go after the Hood because he escaped. And the Hood has really been the villain in this book for...
Yeah.
The last half of it, basically. And they said, well, this guy's not getting away. And they weren't sure what their status is. They weren't sure if they were still fugitives or whatever. They said, whatever happens, we're going to go get the Hood. Who's with me? And they're like, I am. And they find out that the Hood is with Madame Mask's father, Count Nefaria, who is an old school Marvel villain. And I love it. I do. I love old school Marvel villains when they sort of make them work now. You know what I mean? And they set up Nefaria to be very... badass, like he's a real big threat to the Avengers, and there was this really big fight scene, and it was like I was reading the fight scene, I was like, wow, the Avengers are totally cutting loose, and they're like really fighting, and it makes sense because a lot of times the fight scenes are glossed over, and it's just explosions and blah blah blah, and I was like, it's kind of fun to watch. This is a fun fight scene to watch, and there was tactics to it, and then the big reveal is like, and Wolverine hadn't been there all along, and then he shows up and he just slices the hell out of Nefaria. Yeah. And I was cool. And then Ms. Marvel delivers the coup de grace. I was like, that was a fun fight scene. I was like, I had fun reading that. And then I get to the end, and there's this long sort of, like, they wrap the story up, and they say, oh, you're all free now. It's fine. And then there's this sort of set of two-page spreads by the artists who did each of the arcs throughout the series. And I was like, I don't know. It gave me a very nice feeling. I thought it was a really good end cap. And at the end of the day, this was the book, and really mostly for sort of my connection to these stories and these characters, that I had the most sort of fun. It made me feel the best after the end of it. And that is, you know, in a world where there were a lot of Avengers books and a lot of things went down, I thought that this was the most sort of satisfying ending.
You played a card from my deck with this pick, and that this was quite the emotional pick for you.
Yeah, totally,
which is fine, which is totally good. It was funny because when I hadn't read my books yet, and I saw you posted your pick, and then I didn't read the review, and then I read my books, and then I saw you pick this book, and I was all ready to tear you apart, tear you to pieces for picking this. And then I read your review, and I was like, oh, I can't argue with that. Because you're totally right. You're totally right. Like for what you describe, like, yes, you know, this ends the whole new Avengers arc. I'm glad that they didn't leave the hood dangling and just kind of sneak away. Like, they dealt with it, and the all the new Avengers artists, the two page spreads, like, yeah, going through the ages was like, it reminded me of the end of 6 Feet Under.
Yeah,
yeah, which is like this kind of, you know, like, retrospective of all the characters, and
that's
just very
emotional.
That's the
best last episode of TV ever.
It really is. But the reason why this wouldn't have been my pick was because while the story was great and Bendis doing his thing, the art was atrocious in places.
Now I address that a little bit because I have really not been, like, I used to be that Brian Hitch did a book and it was a big deal. Brian Hitch and Mark Waid do a JLA book and it's tabloid size and it's gorgeous.
Yep.
And Paul Neary really had a lot to do with that.
Well, no, and I saw you wrote about that, but this isn't because Butch Geist is inking them. This was like,
no.
it's credited as what's the guy's name? Brian Hitch with Stuart Immonen.
Yes.
All right. I can't see Immonen anywhere in this art.
But I think Stuart Immonen is a chameleon.
Yeah, no, exactly, which I understand. But there were some panels and there were some character renderings that were like, this book was rushed. You can tell it was rushed by the fact
that
the multiple artists, the multiple colorists, the multiple inkers, and they were like Spider-Man in costume. There was one point where he was drawn where his head was like a different size. Like, when they're in the ship, when they're going to get the and it was like that red lighting, and I looked at it, I'm like, who, like, it just looked really wrong. And then possibly the worst Wolverine I've ever seen drawn. Mm-hmm. Like, that Wolverine was bad. It feels rushed, you know.
It worked for me, like, the composition, and it, like, it just worked. Like, the hand sort of grabs out at you. And I went with that. And the thing is, at a certain point, like, sometimes a book, like, that's what you're saying is not untrue.
Right. Yeah.
But at a certain point, you know, you either decide to let go or not, or you don't
exactly,
decide. But
exactly.
You either have let go or not. And I said all the same things at the beginning of it, but I let go of that stuff subconsciously. And I just kind of went and enjoyed it. And, like, to look at it, like, from a sort of storytelling, like Hitch's action composition and storytelling are as good as anybody.
Yeah,
when he gets the proportions right, he has anatomy problems sometimes.
I wish he would stop doing the white panel borders. But they start doing Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
Like, I feel like that's over. Like, that little experiment's over. But or it should be, at least. But that said, despite my moaning over the art, I enjoyed the issue. The story was great, and it got to a point where it needed to be. So I didn't hate it. I thought the art was just rough.
I can see that. But yeah. And I've had the same problem with Hitch for a while. Like, it's why Cap Reborn, I don't think, was as successful as it could have been.
Yeah.
The work just doesn't look as good as, like, say, the Authority did. I don't know why.
That was 10 years ago. So
sure.
Think about that, huh?
Yeah, but he's only done, like, 3 years worth of books.
So basically, Josh, what you're saying is you're on another level from us as far as reading this. Like,
I'm saying your mileage may vary, and I'm completely accepting of that. But I do
think that on
the surface, it was a good end to a chapter. And, like, sometimes when you really like something, it's been with you for a long time, a satisfying ending is better than a really excellent other book.
I would guess that the next chapter in New Avengers would be dealing with the power vacuum after Count Nefaria disappears. once a count is gone.
I know. You know. There's got to be consequences there, right?
There's got to be consequences.
A VCOM, I believe. Were it not for this fact that I have to do this show, I could not buy more Avengers. I'd be fine with it.
Yeah, like you could walk away at this point. It's kind of like what we said of Powers. Like, it was a good endpoint in Powers, and
totally was. Yeah,
you reached your end.
Yeah,
the end of your story, your Avengers story. No, it's true. It happens. Yeah. I have the same thing with X-Men. Like, I got to a point where I was like, well, that's it. Like, I read the story I wanted to read.
Yeah,
and then I. You know?
You gotta know when to walk away. I think that's an underrated talent, knowing when to walk away.
Yeah. Know when to hold them. Know when to fold them. By the way, just again, that is the best song to play in a group on Rock Band.
Yes, it
again,
is. Yeah,
Kenny Rogers.
A lot of fun. Just a lot of fun.
Putting it out there again.
Tom, did you read this finale issue or no?
No, I did not.
Just want to make sure before we moved on. So, so in addition to New Avengers finale, it was also Siege End Week.
Yes. Yeah.
Which means that every book related to Siege seems to have ended. And so,
you know what? I hate that it happened all in one week, but it was kind of like, well, all right.
It was nice just to get it all over with, to be honest.
Yeah,
it was really nice. So we're going to go through. Okay, we've got four books in front of us. We're going to go through them fairly quickly. But,
let's do it.
Okay, so Siege number four.
Wish I'd read this first. I know there was a big banner in the
Oh, you didn't?
I read Fallen Sun first, but we'll get to that.
Whoa! What?
It kind of took the impact away a little bit, and I skip those recap pages a lot of times because I don't. I liked it. It was a good ending, really good looking. It's like others.
I thought it was a very functional ending to it. It has all the same problems that I think Bendis has with these books. Is that he doesn't do like this sort of big spectacle ending very well,
right.
And I sort of got confused by what Thor did differently the second time he attacked him. It just kind of felt like he went in circles for a little bit. I mean, it wasn't bad. I was like, oh, well, that's how something like this would end. It was a very solid, well-drawn ending to the story.
Coppell did great again. That two-page spread with Iron Man turning the helicarrier into a bullet was awesome.
Are there any helicarriers left?
I don't think so.
Oh, the humanity.
God. Again. Again. Crashing again.
I think my favorite part of this, though, is the way that Osborn is portrayed with like the green on his face. And I was like, that's a really nice drawing. And that gets it across really well. Like, you're seeing the human, but with the green goblin on it. I think it's a really cool image. I think it's interesting that the sort of culmination of this whole story is about the Sentry, really.
Yeah.
Like, the climax of it is about the Sentry. It's really, you know, for something I liked so much, it was the Sentry's story, which I find interesting.
To be honest, if you look at it, because it started, okay, you got Norman, the Sentry, and Loki. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know why Loki did this.
He said it in this.
But I still don't understand.
I don't either. But he's, you know, he's the god of mischief. What do you want?
Well, he's dead. He's dead now. So
sure he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure he is.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you had Loki influencing Norman to start, you know, a conflict, and mm-hmm. you know, and then the Sentry Karen. I mean, it seems like there was a couple of different places where I don't really know. Was this a Thor story? Was this an Avengers story? Was this a Cap story? I mean, I guess it covers all of them, so I guess that works in a certain degree, but. I don't know.
It's a Sentry story.
I did like the Lord of the Rings ending, though.
It just smiles and just like everyone looking at each other.
Well, no, and it ended a couple of times. Like, it's like, you know, like I read maybe like four pages that could have been the last page. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's fine because it set the new not to use the word that we hate, but set the new status quo. You know, and it set the
that is what it is.
Though. Yeah, totally.
That's all comics endings are.
Yeah, yeah.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. God, that heroic age design is awful.
I know it really is.
Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, but no, this is good. I thought Siege was a great four issue event. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun. So.
Moving on to Dark Avengers number 16, the end of the Dark Avengers book. A very nice little text piece at the end by Bendis. I thought it was good. You know, they get their comeuppance. I thought the scene with Victoria Hand was really kind of well done.
Art was weird.
I'm not a Mike Deodato fan. Sometimes
this was like weirder Deodato. This is like weird, like Deodato, Ariel Olivetti territory. Like there was something weird going on with the. It was like very. I don't know. It wasn't like on this title. Deodato has been way more almost messy with the art, and some of the lines were cleaner this time around. Like I don't know if it was the inker or. No, there's no – who is it? Yeah, there's no inker. So, yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah.
Weird.
That Eisenhoff kind of thing?
Yeah, it just felt weird. It struck me funny.
Rambaretto is the color artist.
Yeah, which is weird. When you give a color artist, what does that mean? Anyway.
That means that there's no inking.
Yeah.
It's like Eisenhoff did.
Yeah, or Paul Mounce, but Paul Mounce does it well. Zing.
I think it's just that it wasn't consistent.
Yeah,
like one
exactly.
page is different than another. But
I like you have the events in like almost like a cube, and with Dark Avengers and Siege, New Avengers finale, and we're gonna talk about Siege Embedded. It's all like just turning the cube at a different angle, but like the same things. Like even down to the same dialogue. Like you see that like when they capture Norman, like in what Cap says, like in each of those books, you saw it from like a different angle, which I like when that happens. It's a continuity thing. Yeah. But
so. And it was nice to see Norman get his comeuppance, I think. I got to say, it would have been all right if he got killed. Why are you killing everybody else for it? Kill him at the end.
Yeah.
Finds, you know, for whatever reason, but no, because he's
the heroes,
you know, but
yeah.
It was a good ending for him.
I did like when Cap was meeting with Victoria Hand and he was like, "Do you know who I am?" She's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Did we ever meet?" And she's like, "No, I was an accountant." He's like, "No, I know, but did we ever meet?" Like, it was just like, I like that he knows that he's met like thousands of people. You know?
It's been around a long time.
I know, that was a nice little touch. But yeah, whatever.
Siege Embedded, number four.
I thought this was almost a better version of the end because I thought it was actually pretty resonant. I like the idea of Ben Urich being present when these things are going on. And to be honest, in Siege 4, like the whole like time for everyone to power up with other people's you know, like that back and forth that does, and at the end they just still just beat the void.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't matter like all like, oh, we have powers now, we got them now.
The power up was unnecessary.
Didn't believe it 5 minutes ago, but now we do.
Yeah.
And that sort of is not present in Embedded, and you just kind of see, you get the same point. You get that they beat them, and you get that the status quo has changed, that everyone's kind of like more optimistic.
Yeah.
And I thought it was almost a better version of the same ending because you saw it from a much more grounded point of view, which I thought was much more Marvel than Siege actually was in portions.
It's that different angle, and I really like this. I thought Brian Reed and Chris Somney, you know, and Matt Wilson nailed this whole series. I mean, this Siege Embedded was probably one of my favorite things of Siege, totally, because Urich and his camera guy friend and Heimdall, whatever, were just. I mean, that's a great grouping and
Volstagg.
Yeah.
Did you notice?
Oh, it was Volstagg. I'm sorry, Heimdall.
They didn't call it Frontline Siege, and I'm guessing they didn't for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, that water's been poisoned. Let's switch it up a little bit.
And I'm not usually a huge fan of the Ben Urich stories. Like, he kind of becomes like a cipher for whatever someone wants to lay on top of it. But this time I actually kind of I thought, I kind of get where he's coming from, and it's kind of interesting to see a person in this situation. And you get the same ending as Siege, but almost better.
Well, the problem with Ben Urich that we always said, this goes back years ago, is that, you know, Bendis wrote a badass Urich in Daredevil, and where he's got the trench coat and he's the journalist and he smokes and all stuff like that. And then for some reason, every other characterization of him, like in Frontline and Civil War and stuff like that, made him like nebbish Woody Allen-esque.
I don't know if we can go up to Asgard.
Exactly.
How much do you tip an Asgardian waitress?
And I think this is somewhere in between the two, where you got a little bit of like hapless, unlucky kind of loser guy, but also like badass reporter guy. So but it was great. It was really good.
All right.
Now on to the main event.
Jeez. All right. So I want you to imagine something. You come home one day. There's your wife, your significant other, whatever. She's totally sad and broken up. And you're like, why? What happened? And then she explains to you this amazing life with this person that she's had forever that you've never heard of. And she talks about how, and we used to hang out all the time. And you remember and blah, blah. And you're going, this never happened, though. And she goes, no, it's completely true. And you go, but I've known you for 20 years. And this person has never been a part of your life. None of these things could have ever happened. And she says, no, we'd just like you to believe it.
Yeah.
And then she's breaking down and crying and putting on all these histrionics. And you're supposed to feel that way too. She feels very bad because you're very familiar with her, you care for her very much, but you don't know what the fuck she's talking about.
Yeah.
Wait.
And it's Fallen Sun.
And Fallen Sun, the Sentry's swan song, was much like that.
Wait, so this wasn't a what if?
What the fuck?
Do you know how bad this was? This was so bad that halfway through the comic, the dog walked off from the store. Even the dog didn't stick around to be pummeled like I was by reading the whole thing.
I'm watching the people walk up at the graveyard, and I'm like,
in their costumes.
What? Rogue?
Well, wait a minute. Before we
couldn't get there on time. Reed Richards said we couldn't get there on time because it was too hard to organize a funeral.
Who was the guy? The one with the dog.
Scout?
Who's this character? I've never heard of him either.
I find the comic becomes much better if you simply impose your own thoughts over the dog's rough balloons. You just have the dog saying like, what the fuck? As like everyone's in there. It enters a whole new level. Yeah, exactly. The dog has his own thoughts about this crazy ass story that you're reading.
It was
crazy. I don't know who any of these people are.
It was crazy. It was so out of character and crap for everyone.
No, seriously though. Now, when the Century miniseries came out, and Connor and Ron and I have talked about this a lot, like they really didn't like it because it was saying this whole thing happened.
Yeah, what I don't like is having something crowbarred down my throat to tell me this is what happened.
And I get that, and I almost defended it because I was really into Jenkins and Lee back then, and that's fine. But the other thing was is that everybody was made to forget it.
Right.
So what this tells me, which nothing else, by the way, has said since then, is that not only was the Century back, but that everybody remembered all of the stuff that had happened before, and that is just canon now.
Yeah.
And I don't
that the Century was totally much better than everyone else in every possible way.
Yes.
Like, especially the part with the Thing. I was just really? Like, so the Thing was going to kill this guy, and the Century, I was just like, it just made everyone else, instead of making the Century seem bigger, it made everyone else seem smaller.
So, I'm sorry, Century took Rogue's virginity? What the hell? Like, seriously? I don't accept it. I don't accept it.
I don't accept Tony Stark's ridiculous speech. I mean, I'm an alcoholic, everybody. And he showed me. No, he did not.
No.
He did not.
And then talking about the recipes and
what the fuck was that? And so wait a minute. Did the Century cheat on his wife with Rogue?
Yeah.
I was doing the timeline. I was doing the math, and it doesn't add up.
Either that, or it happened decades ago, which means that this has all been going along all this time.
And
the Thing hates him.
And the most actioned pack sequence of this book is a panel of the Century thinking hard in a visual medium sitting someplace.
Well, and that's one more thing to talk about.
Just boring visually.
We don't do this that often where we really have to come out of the book, but. Okay, it was solicited without a writer's name.
And without a title.
Whatever.
No, okay.
And so Tom Rainey is the artist on this one. And it's just like, I don't know if anybody else knows, this was an unending series of two shots.
Yes.
It was just torso, 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 head, torso, 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 head.
Yep.
And then Thor dancing with an old lady with no background. Honestly.
I like it that Thor takes it upon himself to go inform his mom.
In costume.
After asking her to dance. Yeah. You don't think she's going to be a little bit pissed off with her after he's like, oh, I hope you enjoyed that dance. By the way, I killed your son.
Wait. We buried the lead here first, because in Siege 4, Siege number 4, the Century, and as evidenced by this epilogue, Fallen Sun, the Century is now dead. Okay?
This was so bad, I wanted to find a way for the Century to die again. Would have been the only
there are two thoughts here. Number one is that selfishly, talk about us first, is that months ago when we talked about the Century, over the past few years, I have always said, and we've always talked about, I said there is no redeeming the Century. They're going to do nothing. And for the past 2-3 years, Bendis has been like, nah, watch the Century. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be good. And we're like, oh, maybe they're going to redeem him. Maybe they're going to turn him aside. They could do nothing but kill him. 10 years of our life of this fucking character, and all they could do was kill him.
Yeah, but now we're saddled with this fake backstory.
Right, okay. But then number two, Tom, I believe there's some money on the line.
Here's the thing. He's got to stay dead for at least 6 months. And I better not get any more of this bullshit backstory. I better not have a whisper of anyone talking about recipes or talking about like the time they went to a baseball game with Bob or talking about Bob was you know, he was a terrible parallel Parker, and then some stupid joke about getting in like a fender bender. I want none of that.
So
I want at least 6 months of none of that.
So what you're saying is that Bendis cannot expect his check from Mr. Tom Caters until we get through the 6 month waiting period. Yeah.
Because eating this was like his cold dead hand emerged from the grave and hit me directly in the nuts. I was like, this. Oh, the Sentry got me one last time.
Here's the thing is that I've always said the Sentry from the first issue of the first miniseries from the fucking article in Wizard that started it, the Sentry was an insult to Marvel fans, to diehard Marvel fans. It was an insult. And this is like, and this is the final insult. This is the, they roll up this comic and slap us in the face with it, with fucking, with fucking Rogue. Why was Rogue there? Rogue has never been on the same page as the Sentry in 10 years. Ever.
That's because Bob is more important than all other Marvel characters.
If this
and
had
that
been,
they're all tiny compared to him.
If this had been about Captain America, okay. If this had been about the no one got an issue like this. Except for the fucking Sentry, who no one likes.
Oh my god.
Maybe people who've only been around a few years, and in that case, I guess I get it, but okay, and if he was such a great guy, how come all we've ever seen is Looney Tunes?
Exactly.
That's all we've ever seen.
Daredevil?
What was Daredevil doing there?
I wanted a panel like in Family Circus where the grandpa looks down from heaven of the Sentry looking down from heaven crying one last time at everyone's beautiful stories about that we never saw. In fact, not only did we not see him, we didn't see a flashback. We saw pictures of people talking about them.
Yep.
Okay.
Here it is. Here it is. I'm done with Paul Jenkins.
Wow.
That's it. He wrote one of my favorite stories of all time. But you know what? This is the. Oh God.
Oh God!
Let's move on.
Rogue! No, wait a minute! No, I can't move on from this. I will not accept this.
Is it just the Rogue?
It's the Rogue thing.
If
the Rogue thing hadn't been in there, I could have given it a pass. That in with shit, out with shit. But the Rogue thing, was just like punched in the gut and then got you in the balls.
it's almost like if Daredevil would have taken off his mask and said, "The last thing he did before he left was cure my vision." You know, like, the major thing that is like the driving force in this character, Bob fixed.
And you know, exactly. And you know what drives me crazy is that, like, you can't even leave it well enough alone. Let him be dead. Let him be buried. Have Tony drinking his water and his beer. But no, you've got to introduce some diary that Reed Richards read that he can't tell anyone.
Oh, good. So it's not over.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, look at this. Before he died, he gave me back the Eye of Agamotto. I'm Sense Rusher Supreme again. Oh, good enough. Oh, look, it's Captain Marvel. He's been resurrected. Good enough.
What happened? Bob touched him right before he died. Bob fixes everything.
Oh, it's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment. They should be ashamed.
You're so angry.
I'm really angry.
The thing is, can anybody remember the last time we did this?
No. We're very positive and stuff like that, but this will not stand.
No, it was... Let's move on.
We move on?
Yes.
And we paid $3.99 for it. That's what kills me. $4 out the door.
Oh, the Sentry showed up and gave me the $4 for my copy, Ron.
Nice.
Did he not give you yours?
All right. Anyway, okay. Let's go across the street.
According to the return of Bruce Wayne, there's a chance he could come back.
It's true. A Sentry fighting cavemen. I would almost be okay with that.
So this is like a big deal book, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to get back into the mode.
I'll start off with a positive. I really enjoyed this. Like, I'm sure that it wasn't like mind blowing, but then it's okay just to have a Batman story where Batman's fighting cavemen, and that's it. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Yeah,
it
won me over. At first I was kind of like, whatever, cavemen speak, whatever. And then sort of by the end, I was having fun with it. I can definitely say that. And it occurred to me. Like, I'm kind of slow, so I was like, oh, it's Vandal Savage.
Well, right. I was going to ask Tom. I was going to say, is that Vandal Savage? Because when I...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
making sure. All right.
And he got his own Robin in that time, you know. Yeah.
How did he get the Domino mask?
Oh, well. Sentry showed up and gave it to him. We had a great time.
No, I thought yeah, I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the art.
I was just, yeah, no, Chris Sprouse is a genius. Yeah. I'm just glad Christian Walker could make an appearance.
So
I thought, thank you. There it is.
Oh, going deep.
But nice.
I thought it was cool. I thought it avoided, I think, sometimes of the thing that people worry about with Morrison is like, oh, am I going to be able to understand? There's nothing more to understand to it other than Batman with cavemen.
Yeah.
Well, there was a little explanation at the end about what's going on when the Justice League.
Yeah, but it wasn't like it wasn't like
care.
Complicated. It wasn't like, uh-huh. Is this an explanation for like the orbits of the planets?
You know? Right, right. So you're right.
A recipe for magic with a K. No, it's just Batman fighting cavemen.
Is that Rip Hunter back there in the bubble?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's badass. I'm cool with that. Yeah, but this was it's really good looking book. I mean, like I could deal with more Chris Sprouse. Definitely.
Yes, I could. I could as well.
He's not on the next one though. Although, will you? So, in that case, will you be buying the Tom Strong series that is not written by Alan Moore, but is drawn by Chris Sprouse?
Well, there you go. That's one half of it.
Put me on the spot there.
Not the right half.
maybe. I've always enjoyed Tom Strong. I enjoy his art. And I'm looking forward to see Batman in... Is the next one would be Pilgrims? Batman versus Pilgrims?
That's
the
one. Yeah.
I mean, that's a long way. There's a lot that happened in the middle there.
It's whatever.
What can you do?
Yeah, what can you do? You gotta get to the next part.
Ron.
So,
need to know.
Hulk, Hulk number two, Hulk number 22 came out. We talked to Jeff Loeb on iFanboy Don't Miss last week about it. And I gotta admit, I've used this whole Red Hulk for the past 2 years as a punchline. But after hearing Loeb talk about it very sincerely, and then also talking to Sarah, I've been fascinated by this whole Hulk thing. That's one thing. I mean,
it's a pyramid scheme, Ron.
I know. I think it is.
He sold me on it. I know. I finished the show and I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
No. I don't want to read it.
You know, and it's like I've talked to a couple of really diehard Hulk fans. And like, so we had Gary Miller, who does a blog, and he's the guy who had a theory. We posted in December his theory about who the Red Hulk was. He's a huge Hulk fan. There's a couple guys in my comic store who huge Hulk fans. They're loving the hell out of this entire run and this entire story, and like the energy that's been built up for this issue was just so like everyone was on the edge of their seat. And sure enough, as Gary predicted on our website and on his blog, that the Red Hulk's identity is General Thunderbolt Ross with mustache and all. Don't ask me where the mustache goes when he turns into the Red Hulk, though.
Where the pants go.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this one question, actually. Was the whole thing, was every issue more or less on time, or was it all done by McGinnis?
No, it wasn't all done by McGinnis.
Okay.
Yeah. Cho got in there, I think, a little. It was a mix of artists here and there.
Okay.
But McGinnis did a lot of it, though. A lot of it. Yeah.
That's just curious.
But that said, the art in this is awesome. Again, I really do like McGinnis's art. I mean, like,
I do too.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Also, the Red She-Hulk is Betty. So there you go.
Is this something I should go back and read it? Should I get in on this pyramid scheme?
I mean, I'm in trade. I might, because you know, like the guy who owns my comic store he sat down one weekend and read them all up to a certain point. He said it is. Like, if you were a big Hulk Marvel continuity nerd. Like, there's so much calls to the past and direct, you know, kind of like things that, like, something that happened in Hulk 174 and things like that. And so it's you know, it seems to be, but also in a way that you don't need to know that, you know, like, you can just have fun with it. It just seems like a lot of fun. So I gotta give him credit.
I've heard, you know, at first it was the Hulk, the Red Hulk's been sort of a punchline. But I keep hearing stuff from people that, whose opinion actually respected, said that it's been pretty good, so I might actually check it out.
Yeah,
Connor liked it, didn't he?
Yeah, like, Connor did. Like, yeah, he did like it. Yeah. So, if he ever resurfaces, we'll ask him what he thinks of this.
I doubt he'll be resurfacing from where we put him.
Yeah. Anyway, so Tom, there was one more book that was.
Yeah, I'm gonna make this short too, because this is not to get back into the anger again. Whereas Century Fallen Sun was more of like a red hot. Anger. This is just more of like a smoldering resentment.
Yeah.
Because Titans Villains for Hire one shot had Deathstroke and like his team going out, and they get hired to kill Ryan Choi, the Atom, who they kill.
No, and, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because every time Deathstroke shows up, you have to show that he's a badass by having him kill somebody, even though his name is Deathstroke. As if we, you know, as if no one knows what he is, and you have to go kill a character who, God forbid, someone actually use a new character to do something interesting with, instead of being stuck with boring ass Ray Palmer, who nobody like. So now Ryan Choi is gone. Which really sort of pissed me off.
Yeah.
I usually don't get that pissed off about this, but I was like, it just seems so pointless. It was just such like we need to pick somebody to kill for some reason. So let's just pick Ryan Choi. And I thought, because he was actually a character that had like lots of interesting traits, and it was from like a lighter style book, and he was kind of funny.
Yeah.
It just ends up like in a shoebox dead.
Oh, jeez.
You know, like, ugh.
You know, my problem with Ryan Choi was that secret identity name is too close to like a normal person's name. So when you're like, Ryan Choi's dead, like, I'm thinking of like someone who's real, not a character.
You thought yeah. It was the inker from JLA.
But yeah, I mean, the story, I guess, was okay. Yeah. It was just like, I read it and I just left a really bad taste in my mouth. Yeah. There's enough room in the DC universe for like six Flashes,
right.
Two Wildcats. You know, can't we have two Atoms? Do you have to kill the new Atom?
And most fans couldn't tell you a goddamn thing about Ray Palmer.
True, yeah.
I mean, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, so if I don't know where to go from there. So if you wanted to catch up on the Hulk storyline or maybe Titans, you want to go back and read some old Deathstroke stories, you go to InStockTrades.com to get all of your trade paperback and collected edition needs. You can save up to 37% off. They do free shipping on orders over $50. They've got over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock and ready to order. Every Wednesday, they got all the new releases there. Orders usually ship within 48 hours. So go to www.InStockTrades.com and shop for all of your collected edition needs. And we also want to tell you about the Summit City. Summit City Comic Con, which the good fine folks at InStock Trades and Discount Comic Book Service are working to produce for you. If you are in the Fort Wayne, Indiana area on May 22nd, which is, you know, just around the corner, folks. You got another week or two before that happens. What day is it? I don't even know where I am. Next weekend is the Summit City Comic Con in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Go to summitcitycomiccon.com for all the information. Some great artists and comic creators are going to be there. You don't want to miss it. So, all right, we are running late. We're running long, so let's blow through these. Josh, BPRD King of Fear.
I did not add this to the list.
Tom, BPRD King of Fear.
I added it because it was totally sweet. And like most BPRD stories and most of the Hellboy universe, the real like action climax always comes the issue before the last issue. Mm-hmm. And then something cool happens in the last issue. And the whole way of presenting what happened in this issue was great.
Yeah.
It wasn't the sort of fallback on... a lot of times it can be kind of cliche to skip the fight and show it in flashback, but they actually did it in a really cool way and really lasting effects to Earth in total in BPRD.
Yeah.
So, again, great. I mean,
I really like the dichotomy of what happened at the end. They were like, basically, just if I don't know if a lot of people read this in trade or not, but they're now chartered by the UN and they all thought they were going to get fired and they're not really sure what it means. But it was like, this is good news. We're like, we think.
Like, shit really hit the fan. We're like, complete islands were like destroyed.
Yeah.
And there's just natural disasters everywhere. So, yeah, it was great, as BPRD has been.
Cool. Now, Flash number one was the greatest comic that Ron had ever read. Flash number two. Must be the new greatest.
Well, we have to talk about it because Tom's here, but he's Mr. Flash. But I thought it was great. It was Barry built an apartment building.
Yeah, which was cool.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and all the stuff we sort of complained about this week, this like a book like this is sort of nice to have because it was just sort of funny and exciting and it didn't have to kill anybody.
Right.
And it didn't have to like jam weird sentimentality.
And you get two amazing pages of Manipul art of Barry. The one page of save the three kind of the three panels saving people from the fire.
Yes.
With the Flash on the left and the people on the right. And then you turn the page and the Flash saving the mother and the little girl were just great. The art was just awesome.
So. And again, there's some really funny parts, like with the little girl asking for a doll.
Yeah.
And the Flash grabs the wrong one. And then before she can finish complaining,
yep.
the right yeah. one appears in her hand.
They didn't write it, but you could almost hear like Barry.
Yeah. I love Barry. He's great. I love this story. It's great. It's excellent. All right. So the Sword number 24 finishes this series from the Luna Brothers. And I'm left with the same feeling when Girls ended was that, thank God it's over. Finally it's over. It took too long, but it was awesome. So good job, Luna Brothers, for finishing the Sword. And if you haven't read it, pick up and trade or collect it. It's the art is beautiful. The story was really cool. Just a good series. I stopped talking about it a few issues back because it was just stuck in that oh my god, get on with it phase. But once they got on with it, it was good. So good job, X-Men Forever number.
Who added that X-Men Forever 23?
Josh did. Yeah, Josh actually did.
Yeah. Speaking about a well-titled book, this is never going to end.
So real quickly, just to recap something quickly. In X-Men Forever, when the series started, Jean was about to break up with Cyclops because she was going to get with Wolverine finally. Then Wolverine died. Okay? So yeah. Then Jean breaks up with Cyclops totally, but they're still best friends and whatever. They still, you know, whatever. And in the recent issues, Jean has shacked up with Hank McCoy, with the Beast.
Oh, God.
Yep. And in this issue, Hank McCoy told Jean that he loved her, and Jean said, I know, like Han Solo. And then Hank McCoy died. So pretty much the message here is fall in love with Jean Grey, die. So there you
it's
go.
It's crazy that Claremont had this all planned out.
I know. It's amazing. Yeah. It's just,
if he'd been able to do it, there wouldn't be anyone left.
I know. Exactly. He's just killing people left and right. I love it.
You wait till two issues from now when this entry shows up.
Oh, no.
Marvel Project number 8, Josh.
First one was my pick of the week a long time ago.
Yeah, how's that working out for you?
I liked it. I liked it all the way through, but I think the thing that the story was sort of perfunctory a little bit, but it just shows me how much I miss Steve Epting on the main book.
Yeah.
I mean, him along with Dave Stewart on colors, and I'm sorry, I forget who the inker was. I think it was Epting. I think Epting just inked himself.
Yeah,
it was.
Did.
So Dave Stewart just did the color. Actually says color art on that, too.
Yeah,
but
there you go.
Either way, it was a really, really beautiful book. I think if I'm walking away from anything with it, it's that. There was a lot of really nice work in it.
This whole series was just so boring to me.
Yeah, no, and I see that. Yeah. I do see that. But it really was good work. It was Epting's best work, for sure.
Boring work.
Definitely. I wanted to talk very quickly about Transformers Ironhide number 1. You're asking why, and I'm going, I honestly don't know. But the reason this is written by Mike Costa, the guy who wrote G.I. Joe Cobra along with Christos Gage, but he wrote...
So can he bring the magic to Transformers?
That's kind of what I was trying for. Yeah. And also he was tweeting that like this was like his best reviewed book ever, and I was like, you did that G.I. Joe Cobra special, though. That was the best book of last year. It was not his best book ever. You know what? It wasn't bad. It was really good. Had it been like, but I can't get over the fact that it's talking robots. Like it's just there's an inherent air of silliness that I don't have much of a affinity for the Transformers. I grew up with them. I'm totally the right age for it. But like they all like had a party and were drinking, and I was like, they're robots. It's sort of silly.
Yeah.
But it was well done. If they'd been humans, I think it would have been fantastic. That's my thing.
That's your issue. You're not cool with robots drinking.
I know. Well, they can do a lot of damage. I don't know what they drink. I said in our light week feature, which is ironic this week, that I was going to try Birds of Prey number 1, written by Gil Simone and drawn by Ed Bettis. Everything about this screams a book that is not really for me.
Yep.
But I thought I would give it a shot anyway. And I wanted to follow up on it, I guess. It was okay.
Yeah.
I didn't find Ed Benes' art to be as offensive as it had been in the past. I do think that...
Well, you know what? I picked this up, too. I picked it up, too. And a couple of, like halfway through, I'm like, wow, the art's really pretty good. It's not as bad as I thought. And the reason why I thought that was because I thought it was done by Billy Tan or Philip Tan, the Tan that we hate.
Yeah.
And it was by Ed Bennett. So I was like, oh, that's why it's good.
I do have to say, however, though, and I was looking at this and thinking about it for a really long time, the cutout on Huntress's stomach serves no purpose.
Yeah. Like, it reminds me of the Invisible Woman in the 90s, the one when she had the four cut out in her cleavage.
Oh, no, that's
that
awful.
Costume. Oh, I love that costume. I mean, not for like creepy. Oh, I love that costume. I love that costume because it was so ridiculous.
But no, like specifically,
it doesn't matter what you think it is, right? It is creepy.
Yeah.
Specifically, there's a couple of butt shots and stuff like that, which is always the reason I like it. But specifically, like Andres's costume, isn't it a bad idea to leave that area exposed?
Yeah. You bleed out in the stomach, right? A gut shot.
I mean,
yeah.
She fights criminals on the street
with knives.
Guns. So. Yeah. Maybe a little Kevlar there. I'm just make it clear. I don't care. But did they make clear Kevlar? But it was fine. It was okay. It's not really my thing. But I gave it a shot. It wasn't bad, I guess.
All right, cool. So those are the comics that we read. I read 25 books this week, including the Wolverine 900, which was about 900 pages, which I don't know why.
I was scrolling through your pull list, and I was like, Jesus.
It was ridiculous. But anyway, so go to ifanboy.com/comics every week. You can do your pull list there, and then come back, and you can rate the books you read and do reviews. And this week, we've got some user reviews, and they all seem to be about the same book. I didn't realize that until just now.
Oops.
So our first review comes from Akamu, who reviewed Siege Epilogue, The Sentry Fallen Sun. Which you might remember us talking about earlier this episode. Josh, you want to explain yourself in this here?
I just wanted to give the other side something to say about it. I thought we are all clearly on one side of things.
Sure.
So Akamu gave it a 5 out of 5 for story and a 5 out of 5 for art.
Oh my God.
I hope you're feeling better and the recovery is quick. 0% of the community made this their pick of the week, which is good because those accounts would have been canceled. And he says, Tom, I'm going to need you to hang on for this one. It's going to be tough. So just right. Paul Jenkins' eulogy for the century is breathtaking. It might make you even regret all those blog entries you made about how you wish they would kill him. While there was a few moments of levity, it's mostly excruciatingly, achingly sad.
True.
I'm told I have little to no soul left, and I teared up several times. And I don't even like the Sentry. This was some wow-level writing. Jenkins is clearly fluent in grief and has exactly the right art team working with him.
Now, to be fair, I do agree with some of the sentiments in here. It was wow-level writing.
Yeah.
It was excruciating and achingly sad. And I teared up several times as well.
For different reasons.
There's a lot of common ground that we can all share.
The fact is, if you bought into it, I could see what he's saying.
Yeah.
But even me, who I hate continuity, I could not buy into it, clearly.
No.
The next one also
different strokes for different folks.
Zombox, I don't think that's the right name. I think I messed that up. That's your mistake.
There you go. A user. Go to the show notes on ifanboy.com to find out what user wrote this review.
Yeah. Ron, why don't you read the review?
Well, he gave the story a 1 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5. And said, this book lost me almost immediately when Tony Stark started talking about his alcoholism in a cliched monologue. It only gets worse from there as Tony talks about his close relationship with Bob, aka the Sentry. Really? When did Tony and Bob hang out? I know it hasn't been in the last 10 years because Tony hasn't been an active part of the Avengers since Avengers Disassembled. Well, that's not right. Can someone point me to the classic issue where Tony and Bob throw back a couple of beers and chase some skirt? There are also some questionable appearances from random Marvel characters. Daredevil, Cyclops, Rogue, the Fantastic Four. Have Daredevil and the Sentry ever been on a panel together? Ever?
That was from C.T. Rose Jr.
Okay, C.T. Rose Jr. Well, good job. Good job. Wow. Rogue!
Yeah.
My God.
I wanted to really hammer it home this time.
Oh, Jesus.
I thought.
Fallen Sun spelled S-U-N.
Yeah, that pissed me off, too. They punned.
We can't get away from this. We're just hating.
This show is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the place for audiobooks. Listen, Audible, it's not about you. It's just the other thing. You can download them to your iPod or any device, your iPad, iPod, iPhone, Touch. Whichever, and you can listen to them. They have over 60,000 titles across all genres. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy and sign up, and you will get a free audiobook and a free 14-day trial. I had to select a book for you to look into, and I picked I'm Dying Up Here. Heartbreak and High Times in Stand-Up's Comedy, Stand-Up Comedy's Golden Era. This is a book that I actually have on my shelf. I haven't had a chance to read it. Connor gave it to me.
It's who's it written by?
It's by William Nodelsayer. Nodelsayer. That's fun.
Billy
Kay. It's about the 70s and stand-up comedy, and I'm really interested in reading it. And if I had – it means I can't find time to read the actual book, but if I had an extra 8 hours and 24 minutes, I could listen to this. That's what I would do.
It's so good. So
if you need to get away from comics for a while and you're looking for something else, I understand is what I'm saying. So audible.com.
Audiblepodcast.com/iFanboy. All right. So on to the email. Our sole email for this episode comes from Steve, who says, when you say, quote unquote, I'm dropping this, and then, quote unquote, I'm getting this again, the thought is heinous to a perfectionist like me. I have to have a complete run. Therefore, I can't comprehend when somebody stops, say Captain America, if it gets lame, then picks it up when it gets better, and over. Do you guys have definite gaps like that in your titles? And if so, do you ever want to go back and pick up the issues you didn't get the first time? Or does it really matter to you if you do have gaps? Is there a title where you would never do that?
I think we're going to have different answers here.
Oh, I could predict. No, let's play a fun little game. Josh, you answer for me, and I'll answer for you.
Ron really doesn't like gaps. There are maybe some things that he wouldn't bother going back for, but there are some things that he would definitely not let gaps occur in. But then the thing is, it's kind of false, because the things that he wouldn't let gaps occur in, he wouldn't have dropped the book anyway.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
Josh, on the other hand, he wants to read good stories. And if a creative team is on a good title and they're going on really well, and then a new creative team comes on that he doesn't like, he's no problem walking away from it and then coming back when a better creative team is back.
None. My collection would drive you nuts.
Yep.
I mean, like, it's just – even things I really like, I'll miss an issue here and then, and I'm like, meh, whatever.
So now I'm really curious what Tom's answer is, because I have a feeling that Tom has both tendencies.
I'm a little – I'm probably pretty in between you guys. I mean, there's stuff that I wouldn't say I'm nearly as cavalier as Josh is about dropping stuff, but I'm nowhere near Ron's level of like continuing to get stuff obsession. I mean, I have definite gaps in my comic books. I just don't think about going back and filling in gaps. If I really wanted it, I would have gotten it at the time.
Right.
And unless
something
like if I miss it and then like I keep hearing how good it was and I guessed that it was going to be bad, but then I don't really consider that filling in a gap, because I'll just go back the next week.
What I think is the real difference here is that Steve is coming at this from the concept of a collection, whereas I think sometimes we come at it in that we're just reading stuff, you know. And so it's the kind of thing where, like, if there was a, you know, if I, you know, for example, I jumped on Captain America after Josh and Connor were saying how great it was, and I got the first two kind of hardcovers and I caught up. I didn't go back to fill in those gaps because I read the hardcovers. I wasn't collecting Captain America. I was reading Captain America.
But you didn't want to read all the issues.
Oh, no, I did, but I read them in paperback. I didn't have to go back and get the issues. And the thing is that, like, and I'm trying to think of other examples, but it's failing me. But there have been times where I just start reading a book and I don't feel the need to go back because I'm not collecting that title. But on the other hand, I kept on buying The Flash because when The Flash was bad all those years in the middle of this past decade, because I was collecting The Flash.
Right.
You know, I collect the Uncanny X-Men. I'm going back systematically to get an entire run of Uncanny X-Men.
I can think of at least one title that I do have every issue of and I won't miss.
Astro City.
Yeah, it's Astro City. Exactly. Yep. Yep. I have every single issue of that in issue form. I don't know why.
I love that you're holding on to the format. That's awesome.
Yeah, I even have some of the trades. But I went back. Like that was one of those things. Like I went back and hunted. I have a complete collection of that.
Yeah,
which is weird.
Tom, do you have any complete runs, or do you have any things you're collecting?
I have a lot of old Silver Age Justice League and Flash comics. But my approach has always been like a lot of them are just really beat up. You know, I grab them when I see them on the cheap.
Yeah,
you know, like so I wouldn't say I'm necessarily. I wouldn't say my goal. Like I'm not desperate to get like every Bronze Age Justice League issue. I do have all the Flash ones, but those are pretty easy to come across.
You do have all of them. You have an unbroken line?
From about Flash 130 something.
When does it start?
With 104 was the Silver Age one.
Okay.
So were there issues you were chasing for a while? You're like, oh yes, 224.
To be honest, most of them, once you get above 170, are really easy and cheap to find. So, I mean, it was never... I mean, I guess you could say I did, but it wasn't like a quest. Right. You know, like I could get them so easily that it just wasn't a big deal. And you can find reader copies of older ones, you know, for reasonable prices. But there isn't like... There's not this gap where there's a $25 comic or like a $50 one right. that like I got my eye on that I'm going
to
get.
Right. You see, I'm lucky because I have the first appearance of Gambit already, so I don't need to go back and buy that. So I'm good.
You are lucky.
You too. But are you still pursuing your run of Uncanny?
Not as actively.
what do you – you aren't, Ron.
You have a list.
No, the reason why is that I have fallen behind, and that I have a bunch of new ones that need to be filed, and so I couldn't tell you what issues I need right now because I have a stack of Uncannies in a long box that I need to file in with the collection. Then I'll do an inventory and figure out which ones I need. But I was working on 100 to 200, and I made a lot of headway. But then I moved and shit got crazy, and you know how it is, life.
Let me check the list. Let's see. One, two. Three.
Someday when I reorganize my comics, I will then go get back on the hunt. But in the meantime, then I move to New Mutants and things like that. Yeah.
You'll bring midlife cat, crisis waiting to happen.
You'll pick up your cat and bring it over and say, look at what I've done. Look at what I've done, Ron.
Thanks.
You name your cat Ron. Ron Jr., this is all going to be yours someday.
Oh, it's so sad. Oh, single tear.
Ouch. Oh, that was a really good question. So thank you much for that, Steve. If you have a question or anything else, you can send us an email at contact@ifanboy.com. We went long. Okay, you can blame the sentry for this.
Yeah.
No voicemails this week, but if you have one, get a good one too. Let's see. 888-FANBOYS, which is 3262697. Call up and leave a message. Not too long. Leave your name. Tell us where you're from. Don't expound for too long on your theories of the universe. No. Yeah. But you can leave us a voice message and maybe it'll get read on the show. Now,
maybe
we must quickly finish up. This has been too much revelry. You want to check out our Don't Miss podcast. That's what I'm telling you right now. It comes out every Monday where we pick one book and we talk to a creator from that book that's coming out that Wednesday. This last week, Ron talked to Jeff Loeb about Hulk 22, the book we talked about before.
And it really surprised you. It surprised you, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. He was entertaining to listen to. Yeah. And it was a 26-minute show.
Well, the guy likes to talk.
Normally supposed to be 10 to 15.
I know, but the thing is that you could hear me about 15 minutes in start to try to wrap it up, and then he starts talking about Herb Trimpe and Sal Buscema, and he had me all over again.
Yeah, well, so, it's fun.
Yeah,
I like that I did this to you publicly. I really wanted you to go, do we have to do this here, Josh?
No, I knew it was long, but I figured it was our 25th episode. It was our 25th episode. It deserved to be bonus-sized. Okay, yeah.
Awkward for me.
Yeah.
Next week, it's a surprise.
It's going to be somebody good.
Yeah.
Don't you worry. You're also going to want to check out, we released this past Wednesday, did a Talksplode with Ruan J. Telecki, who works at Marvel on the motion comics projects. Really fascinating conversation about what Marvel's doing with these motion comics, whether you like them or dislike them. You finally get someone from Marvel telling you what a motion comic is versus animation and, you know, basically addressing a lot of the criticisms of motion comics. So specifically, we're talking about Iron Man Extremis, where on that podcast I found out it is not Extremis. It's Extremis. And it was a good conversation. So definitely,
you're really going with all the controversial figures.
I really am. So so go look for that in the feed underneath this episode or on ifanboy.com.
You're one step away from being Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes.
Nice.
maybe more than a step. Get to ifanboy.com to check out all that stuff we just talked about, to comment on this show, read the Pick of the Week review, all of the numerous things that go up on the site on a day-to-day basis, including Tom's column on Fridays.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There's all sorts of stuff there. Lots of community. You can go and make your pull list. That pull list function, man, that's badass. If I didn't do the site, I would still use that. So make sure you get over there. Word Balloon podcasts, a special edition podcast, all sorts of stuff. Get to ifanboy.com/about to see all the social networking links for us and the places that you can hook up with us on the web otherwise. And also to see the video show. Last week, Iron Man. And this next week... we're talking to Greg Rucka and Matthew Southworth, mostly about Stumptown, but it's from our vault. Yeah. I'll say. This one, we dug this one out. We shot this a long time ago, and I'm really glad we're finally going to get the chance to use it. So look forward to that one.
Yeah, cool. And if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. Any questions or comments or anything you might have. And if you like what we do, go to iTunes and write a review. It helps people discover us and what we do, as well as tell your friends about the show, tell your friends about iFanboy. But when you're in iTunes writing a review, why don't you go, if you haven't yet, subscribe to Tom vs. the Flash, which is the fine podcast that Tom does, and write a review for that, because Tom is a junkie for reviews.
I need it.
You need
it. I need it bad.
So Tom, I was listening to you today on your latest episode, and I realized that you're kind of almost in the home stretch here with the Flash.
Within the last 50.
Yeah. So that's and it's about 2 a week. So you've got, you know, you it's about 20 weeks or so, and you'll be done.
Kicking it up to 3 a week, Ron.
Oh, wow.
I got a lot of time.
Wow.
Got a lot of time. I think I can keep it up.
Yeah.
I tend to listen to them in batches, and I'll plow through like 5 of them, and I'll be like, all right. And then a week later, I'll be like, frig, they're back.
Can't stop.
This last one, can't you stop. Apologized at the end for it being a boring issue. Like, I can't help it. I'm sorry.
Like, sometimes it's tough. It's like one where it's like, oh, this is boring. It's not. There's nothing weird going on.
I like how you try and continually be polite to Don Heck. He's trying. You clearly don't like him.
I know. I just don't want to rag on him.
That Flash ring was an aberration, though. That was century
that was
level.
One of the most horrific things. I mean, that's Fallen Sun level.
That was like showing he never read an issue before he drew it. He's like, what? He's got a ring? All right, it's Barry B.
Don Heck was the first artist to draw Hawkeye.
Wow. Yeah, and Iron Man.
Whatever.
All right. Anyway.
So I'm sure he was a great guy.
Yeah. Keep in mind that he drew Hawkeye and Iron Man in the early 60s, and these stories are in the early 80s. So
yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
John Romita Jr. has been drawing stuff since the 70s, and it doesn't suck.
That's true.
That's true.
Anyway, but you made me laugh again on the bus last week. I forget what it was, but it was something where I just laughed out loud, and people looked at me and think I'm crazy. So
it's for you, Ron. For you.
I know. It's amazing. All these other people are talking about your podcast. I'm like, but he does it for me.
I do it for you.
So look at iTunes for Tom vs. the Flash, or Google Tom vs. the Flash. You'll find it. If you're not listening to it, you're missing out. So, all right, Tom. Well, thanks for sitting in on this fun-filled romp.
Thanks for letting me vent.
Oh man, it's gonna take a while to get the bad taste out of my mouth.
I know.
His robot went nuts
and just left.
And just flew away.
His robot could not take it either. Left
Clock? Why have I never heard of Clock before?
Oh, Clock was in it. Clock, that was.
I know, but like none of it's memorable.
Oh man! Bro. All I gotta say is I was so glad that when he died, and then the little stupid thing on top of Avengers Towers went away, and then they fucking just put an Asgardian tower on it. I was like, can we just have a skyscraper?
I'm guessing Midtown wouldn't let that stuff happen. Yeah. By the way, the drawing of the dog as it walks away is the most miserable little rat thing I've ever seen in my life.
So much anger. We had.
This is so bad. Oh.
The dog was just like, fuck it.
Hey, Reed, where'd you get that book? What?
And what's with the lone sound effect when the robot flies away and just goes peep?
And then on the next page, it's still flying away in the background.
It's really kind of funny.
Look at Scout's face in the last panel as opposed to the first. Did he get a scar? What happened?
Yeah,
this might be a comedy book. Yeah. Oh. I think it might be the actual aim.
We're not getting the real value of this book, the comedy from it. I didn't even know Captain America was there, by the way, until the end. I was like, oh, Steve Rogers is there?
He's Captain Steve Rogers now.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't know. And he's in a black turtleneck. What is he? Like, it was like, I didn't even know he was there.
It sucked with the power of a million exploding suns.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.